Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 1st, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Washington Bureau Chief of The Intercept, host of Rising, or one of them, Ryan Grimm will be joining us to look back on some of the top stories of the week. Then, in a little break from format, do a repeat, one of our April Fool's presentations in the past. Also on the program today, Russian forces withdraw from Chernobyl. Apparently, many of them didn't realize where they were. Meanwhile, a humanitarian corridor created for Mariupol. In this country, over 430,000 new jobs added. Unemployment drops again. Same time, Joe Biden's numbers are in the toilet. Announces a plan to release oil reserve through late October. Ballots still being counted, but it looks like it's over. And it appears that workers, Amazon workers in Staten Island, have voted unionized. Possible that even Bessemer Owl.
All right, folks, we have a issue here, and we will try to get Sam back, but we are going to cut to a break real quick, and we'll try to get Sam right back to
unclear if the Senate's going to vote. Are we back?
We are back now, yes. We lost you for about 20 seconds there.
Wow, all right, and I lost the music, too.
Yeah, I faded that because you froze, but...
All right, let's do the keep the music up. Sorry about the technical.
There we go.
Manchin, Kelly, and Sinema join with Republicans to kill Labor Department nominee. Like I said, House passes the $35 a month insulin cap. Unclear if votes exist in the Senate. New York State judge strikes down the New York lawmakers gerrymandered. Democrats to appeal that. Florida judge strikes down Florida election law. Republicans will appeal that. Jury awards a BLM protesters $14 million in excessive police force case. Meanwhile, New Mexico now offering free college option for all residents. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Sorry, folks, we had a little bit of a technical glitch there. And I should also tell you another little glitch for today. Emma is out. She has she's a little bit under the weather. Nothing too serious, but she's got a little illness she's out with. So Casual Friday. Ryan Grimm will be with us in a bit. It is so difficult now that we have set this precedent to talk about Fool's Day. But we're not going to be doing anything. We're going to play a couple of videos later in the program in the spirit of April Fools. And we're going to replay. When was this from? The What was the date?
Halloween 2017.
So we're going to play that reprise, give you a nice shot of Michael Brooks for this Friday. And so we will get to that in a bit. But this big news right now is that it appears, I mean, it literally is going to, I think there's going to be an announcement within, I don't know, moments possibly. They are down to the last box in the counting of votes to unionize some Amazon warehouses in Staten Island. And right now, as of updated just an hour ago, there were over 2,050 votes yes, 1,574 votes no. And I'm not clear how many are in the last box, but I would be surprised if it's enough to overcome that. Now, I imagine there's going to be some, what we see with these things is challenging to votes and this and that, but I this seems to be a like a done deal. And this is a big deal. It is an independent union, Amazon labor union. Here is a brief interview with one of the organizers, done by Jordan Chariton of Status Quo. Here it is.
What does it say that you, Christian, and a couple workers been working for a year just basically took out one of the biggest companies on earth?
It's mind-blowing. Like, Amazon is a multi-billion company, and you know, other people will say, oh, that's impossible for regular workers to go against, you know, a major money-making corporation, but it paid off. You know, a lot of time, dedication we put into unionizing Amazon and to helping fight for workers' rights. It's a very, like, amazing experience, and it's life-changing, and I never knew I would get this far in my life to, you know, be a part of this wonderful moment. It's a blessing.
Thank you.
So there you have it. I mean, this is a big deal, big, big deal. And it's, you know, it's apples and oranges, what's happening in Bessemer. But the Bessemer vote is also very close. It appears that they have been unable to win unionization in the Bessemer plant in Alabama. The vote happened to be coincidentally today. That is not an independent union. That is the retail wholesale department store union. They failed the first time around. There was a challenge to the votes. They're doing it again. There is enough votes being challenged right now that could make up the difference in Bessemer, but from what I'm reading, it doesn't look like that is what people anticipate will happen. We should say, you know, just as a, programming note, like, I feel like we should probably have covered more of what was happening in Staten Island. And we were just sort of, frankly, you know, we tried earlier in the week to get Christian Smalls on, but really, I think we could have been a lot more helpful doing that two or three weeks ago in the run up to the vote. But you know, we will endeavor to do better on that in the future. I think to a certain extent, we had all hands on deck to do that first live show, and we were a little bit distracted, but we should have been on top of that more. So apologies on that accord. But this is big news. I mean, this is, you know, I think what we're going to see is, frankly, we're going to see more of these organizing. The idea that they could do this in Staten Island, it's a bigger push. You know, again, it is Bessemer, Alabama is not exactly situated in the same way that, you know, New York is. But this is a good sign. And it's going to be interesting to watch Amazon react to this.
I mean, it's a battle that, if we remember from back in 2020, I believe, this leaked Amazon memo details plan to smear warehouse worker. He's not smart or articulate, and he ended up forming a union from scratch and beating Amazon.
Yes. They were going right at Christian Smalls, and he basically said, okay, I'll take that. And amazing work. Just a really amazing work. And did this without, you know, should be noted, any real support from some of the bigger, you know, names, political names in New York. AOC apparently was scheduled to go to a rally, didn't make it. I don't know if Mondaire Jones or Jamal Bowman, these names were contacted, but apparently Bernie Sanders' office also contacted. At first, these things looked like it was going to happen, and then it didn't. Hard to know why that's the case. Some way, Bessemer got a lot more attention than what was going on in Staten Island. And the odd thing about it is, and maybe this is a good lesson, I think, too, from an organizational standpoint, the most important organizing happens between the workers and on the ground level. And high-profile publicity doesn't necessarily help. And so these guys did the work. Hopefully we'll see them help with other union drives across the country.
Yeah,
in terms of Amazon. I have a feeling that Bezos et al. Are probably going to take Christian Smalls a little more seriously now. I don't know if that's going to work. I don't know if saying that he's not very bright or well-spoken or whatever it was is going to help them next time. People are asking on the IM, who votes no in this situation? Look, I think there's a lot of, there is a lot of resources that are dedicated both in like a context of a company in that way and also societally resources are dedicated to alienate people from unions.
Amazon spent roughly $4.3 million on anti-union consultants in effort to fight these campaigns. And I don't know if that's specifically the RWDSU, but I assume they spent a lot on this one too.
And we should also say, apparently, one of those union busting outfits was a Democratic pollster. Not sure what the organization is, but these they got to be shunned for this type of stuff. And we need to see, our elected, progressive leaders come out and support these things. So hopefully we'll see more of that. But that's pretty exciting news.
Yeah, that's Global Strategy Group, which served as a polling partner for a pro-Biden super PAC ahead of the 2020 election, was working with Amazon. This is Josh Idelson, labor reporter from Bloomberg News, says, New York Governor Kathy Hochul's centrist primary challenge, Tom Suozzi, just put out a statement condemning her for retaining Global Strategy Group's founder and President Jeffrey Pollock as a campaign strategist while GSG works on Amazon anti-union campaign. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Getting tagged from the left, theoretically, right?
Yeah.
Well, Kathy Hochul may have some other problems, too, with this whole Buffalo thing, but we will see. In terms of that, spending all that taxpayer money. Joe Biden, meanwhile, his numbers, we'll get to that in a moment. We'll get a couple of words from us. Oh, I should also say this, and we've got this linked on our blog and our podcast and YouTube description. There is a rally tonight at 6 p.m. for the Astoria Boulevard Starbucks workers. It is at Astoria Boulevard, Starbucks, 3018 Astoria Boulevard. That would be in Astoria. And you can also get more info by going to Queens or emailing at queens@socialists.nyc. But if you're in the area, go down there. If you see him, honk your horn, go down there and participate in that rally. And we will get more updates on the let's see. So there are a few dozen votes left to count. Workers at the Amazon warehouse in New York City appear to have enough votes to unionize. Final tally wasn't ready yet. Still about a 540 vote difference. Word from our sponsor today. We got two sponsors. First is Headspace. Headspace is, makes it easy for you to learn to basically relax your mind. You can do a bunch of small things that's going to have a huge impact on your long-term happiness and well-being. Headspace is scientifically proven to help you manage your feelings and your mental health. I feel like 90% of the people I know at this point, coming out of COVID, to the extent that we are out of COVID, we should say the numbers are up in New York City, but are train wrecks. And I include myself in that too, like stressed out, frazzled. Good time to provide yourself with a little more attention to how you are doing mentally. Recent study showed that in just 2 weeks, Headspace can reduce your stress by 14%. So what happens? You download the Headspace app. You try their mindfulness routines. It takes just a few minutes a day to change your relationship with stress and anxiety and to start feeling better. Doesn't matter whether you want to relieve stress and anxiety or whether you want to sleep better, you want to improve your focus, Headspace is your everyday dose of mindfulness for real life. You know, we've talked about this in the past. Michael was always trying to get me to meditate or to just like, you know, take a little time. It's very hard for me to do that because I am just, my baseline is just too uptight. And I feel like I can't, I always have to constantly be doing something. Multitasking. Matt is shaking his head. And this is someone who reads while playing video games, while listening to audiobooks, and traveling simultaneously. For me, the walking, mindfulness, not tours, but, audio has been really helpful because I walk to work in the morning, gives me a little bit of time to just sort of like, get my, just bring my focus down. I'm still standing. So I feel like it's got to be helping me in some fashion. But you should check it out. It really is a helpful, very healthy thing to do, particularly in this time. Also great for kids. They got all sorts of different type of sort of, I guess, guided meditations, what you call them. Doesn't matter how you're feeling, try Headspace at headspace.com/majority. You get 1 month free of their entire mindfulness library. This is the best Headspace offer available. Go to headspace.com/majority. That's headspace.com/majority. Check it out. And of course, today's Friday. They got a big sale coming. Big sale coming for Sunset Lake Sebe Day. But right now, of course, you go to Left is Best, you get 20% off. With the coupon code Left is Best, you get 20% off at sunsetlakesebeday.com. They have tinctures, which has become a mainstay for me and for Emma. It's a big help with sleep. Matt is a big fan of their kief and their flower, which he will mix with other products.
Yeah, they got smalls that are already off the stem, so you can just plop them right in your grinder.
There you go. If you have a grinder, if you don't, you want a pre-roll, they got pre-rolls. I have been indulging in that as well. But they also have Sebede fudge. They have Sebede gummies. They have Sebede coffee, which is an amazing, great weekend blend. And all of their products have been tested by third parties. You can see all of the results on their webpage. They are movement partners. They've been really supportive of union strikes and strike funds and soup kitchens and community organizations. And we did a big fundraiser with them. We raised, I think it was over $20,000 for Give Directly between the two of us. Just a great organization. They are also practicing great business and practices and farming practices. So check them out. It is sunsetlakecbd.com, and you will not be disappointed. And you're going to be helping out some movement partners. So check it out. Sunsetlakecbd.com. Left is best gets you 20% off. 20% off. All right, let's do this clip of Joe Biden's numbers are really in the toilet today. Well, actually, you know what? Like, before we do that, let's do this one. We'll do that. Maybe we'll save that one for Grimm. But this is pretty amazing. The Biden administration announced that they're going to be rescinding Title 42 in late May. Title 42, of course, was implemented under executive action under Donald Trump, basically saying we're going to immediately expel any type of refugees or immigrants as they enter the country without any due process, under the auspices of COVID being a problem. And as you know, the Biden administration has decided to join other parties in this country and pretending that COVID no longer is an issue whatsoever. Frankly, I'm not quite convinced that regardless of when Title 42 was an issue, if it made any difference with immigrants anyways, they're starting to offer some vaccinations and whatnot. You could have done testing. Nevertheless, the Biden administration has decided to rescind Title 42. They're taking about a month and a half to do it. They're anticipating a wave of immigrants coming in. Of course, there's a huge backlog who want to get into this country. Of course, we need a bunch of workers as well. I mean, so there's no talk, of course, of providing any type of path to citizenship. All this stuff is off the table. But here is Mitch McConnell addressing Title 42. Interesting what he doesn't mention in his addressing of Title 42.
Even with these Title 42 authorities in place, our borders still been in crisis. Last month was the worst February in more than 20 years. We just saw the worst 12-month period for illegal crossings since at least, listen to this, 1960. This is with Title 42 in place. Just imagine if President Biden kills it. But the open borders far left doesn't like Title 42. So now, according to public reports, the Biden administration is preparing to cave to the radicals in Title 42 and effectively throw our borders completely wide open. Ending Title 42 without any real border security plan in place would spark a humanitarian and security crisis like we've never seen before.
First off, you know what he doesn't mention there is the idea of COVID, because which is the entire premise of Title 42. No mention of COVID. The idea that you need heightened security at the border when you're actually now adhering to the laws of the United States by letting people in and giving them an opportunity to go through a process is absurd. It is true. We're going to need more resources to help these folks. We're going to need more resources to process these folks, but this is easily done. And it's about time we got rid of Title 42. Shouldn't have been there since the day that Joe Biden got into office. I think he said it was one of his campaign promises. Year and a half later, we're just getting rid of it now. So I guess better late than never. But beyond that, there it is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ryan Grimm. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, we're having some technical difficulties with Ryan Grimm. Can't quite figure out what the issue is, but he's. We're going to have him call in. We will not have a visual on Grimm, but I can tell you he looks very good. We just had him. So do we have him on the phone?
And can you clear the phones from up there, Sam?
Oh, okay. Wait. Ryan Grimm's back. Can you hear us? Oh, all right. I don't know what happened.
I don't know. It said I was on the right mic.
Okay. Well, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, the Washington Bureau chief of The Intercept and also the head of their IT department.
Yeah, that's right.
Ryan Grimm. Ryan, also co-host over at Rising, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, Ryan, we got a lot to talk about today. We were just talking earlier about this union drive in this Amazon warehouse in Staten Island. One also happening in Bessemer. It doesn't look like that one went in favor of the union, although there's a slight chance that it could get
Much closer. Right.
But it was closer than it was.
Yeah.
Give me your sense of like what, you know, I read a piece today that I think it was in HuffPost, maybe it was yesterday by Jameson that said that, you know, the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, is incredibly understaffed right now. And if there's a contestment of some of the ballots, it would go to the board and they would and their staff would deal with it. But we're having an increase in unionization attempts around the country, which means that we're having an increase of union busting, mm-hmm. which means that we're having an increase of stuff that could be violations of labor law. But we have a National Labor Relations Board staff that is at the same staff funding levels as 10 years ago. And yeah. So has anybody in Congress thought about this? I don't understand.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Mitch McConnell gives more thought to this than almost anything else. So think about who was running the Senate or who was running Congress 10 years ago. You had Republicans in the House and you still had Democrats running it until 2014 in the Senate. But one of the things over the last like 40 years that has represented the greatest asymmetry between the two parties is the Republican Party's, you know, very dedicated assault on organized labor and support of capital, whereas Democrats were, mildly supportive of labor and mildly supportive of bosses and management. And so the Republicans, every chance they got, did everything they could to destroy labor unions. And then a lot of people tell a lot of different stories about what happened to the labor movement in the 70s and 80s. But, you know, ultimately it was the coalition of, you know, Republican leaders and corporate leaders who changed the laws, started using laws in ways they weren't intended to in order to crush unions. Like everything else is interesting, globalization, productivity, automation, like all of those things are interesting, but they're all sideshows. Like it was a war and they waged it and they haven't stopped waging it. And so when the Republicans got into power in 2010 in the House, you know, the main thing that they were concerned about really in an administrative level was kneecapping the NLRB. And so it's front of mind to Republicans. Whereas for Democrats, it's like, this is a thing we should do. We should support this, but it's not remotely kind of front of mind to them. And so if you do that for 40 years, then you're going to get to a place where, you know, you have an understaffed bureau that for a while I didn't even have a quorum. And you saw they just spiked the legal nominee for the NLRB was Andrew Weil. Republicans teamed up with Manchin, Sinema, and this time Kelly, which is interesting.
It is interesting because, I mean, and we should just say that this this nominee was had been, I think, served in the Obama administration, mm-hmm. was pretty outspoken.
Right. They know this guy.
Of things like gig economy companies and like Uber and whatnot, basically trying to skirt around labor laws and skirt around wages. And so this was a pretty aggressive, you know, fighter for workers' rights.
Wage theft guy, yeah.
And so what is it? What does it say that Kelly? Well, first off, is this a function of how weak Biden is at this point? And how sort of anemic the Republican and the Democratic leadership is, because this is pretty unheard of that you get three, you know, any members of a party striking down, you know, their own party's nominee, A, on a vote, right? Like we saw, right. I can't even remember her name now, but
Sarah Bloom Raskin, right?
No, well, Sarah Bloom Raskin as well at the Fed. But she dropped out, right, in terms of the nomination. Right. And we saw that also with, his first OMB. I can't remember her name now from CAP.
Your friend Neera.
Yeah, Neera Tanden, exactly. But she also dropped out.
Right.
And, but I mean, how does Chuck Schumer allow a floor vote on this and then get, sort of like, I guess, ambushed in some ways?
That's a good question. Unless he did it on purpose so that Kelly, you know, would have something to show the business community and the gig crowd back home. Like that's the only rational explanation for, you know, throwing somebody to the wolves like that. Because, like you said, usually it's like Manchin has spoken, you know, he puts the little cap on the flame and person leaves without a fight. In this case, you know, putting it on the floor, the only explanation I can think of is that it gives Mark Kelly, because Sinema doesn't need any opportunities to, you know, show her fealty to big business. And it gives Kelly, who's been getting hammered back at home by Republicans as a socialist, using Sinema as his as the foil for him. Like, so that's the other thing, that's the kind of knock on effect of Kyrsten Sinema's, you know, theatrical rejection of everything Democratic, is that it then makes Mark Kelly, a moderate senator, look radical relative to her. And so Republicans back home, because he's the one who's up for reelection, have been constantly hitting this theme that, like, Mark Kelly is just like AOC and Nancy Pelosi, whereas Kyrsten Sinema is the reasonable bipartisan senator. And look how they disagree on all of these things, like selling that to like the right leaning independents and the Republicans. So maybe that was his opportunity to come in, and because he had, you know, signed off on parts of the PRO Act, Mark Kelly had, which really infuriated a lot of businesses. You know, we did a story during his election, he's made hundreds of thousands of dollars from corporate speeches, which is what astronauts do. Like, that's not unusual at all. Like, you go, that's like, it's like in your NASA, like, signing bonus. You're going to go to space, and then when you're a hero, you speak at conferences for $50,000 and you're a hero. And so he was doing that up until he ran. And so for a lot of these corporations, like, wait a minute, this guy's taking all these pro-labor positions, and we, you know, paid him, you know, extraordinary amounts of money over the year. That's not how bribery is supposed to work. And so, yeah, I guess
I mean, it wasn't like they were paying him to come in and do.
They weren't paying him to do policy. Exactly. Right. Which they should be told, like, no, you just got an astronaut to speak to your executives. Like, that's what you get for that. You want to bribe a politician, you go bribe a politician.
People really need to understand this dynamic. When Kyrsten Sinema moves to the right, mm-hmm. it is how it's perceived in Arizona is a function of, you know, of outside campaigns against Sinema or for Sinema, and the value to those, you know, maybe those campaigns in support of Sinema. We're, you know, also looking to make Mark Kelly seemed like an outlier because this is the election pickup that they want. Of course, now Chuck Schumer is turning his attention to maintaining the Senate, which is really just about judges at this point, right? I mean, there's no if you're rejecting, if you're willing to reject a nominee from the, you know, the president's nominee, and you're not getting any legislation passed, I mean, really ultimately becomes about judges.
Right. Though it does, like, they are still talking seriously about doing a package that includes some of the corporate tax hikes, some climate stuff, and also probably, like, they would do Obamacare and the drug pricing thing. Because, like, Obamacare, like, people will start getting their notices in October.
Well, yes, that, I mentioned this the other day, but go through this. There were subsidies that allowed for millions of people, maybe 3.5 million, I think the number was, to enter into the exchanges, subsidies that basically made insurance more affordable. I think there was one piece, I think it was Ryan Cooper did this piece in The Prospect, I believe it was, where he outlined a woman who was 60 years old, now paying $93 a month for her health care, would shoot up to something like $1,400 a month. That's extraordinary. And everybody would get these notices that that's going to happen to you in October.
Right. And I think it might've been John Walker wrote a piece on it too for them that, and also like if there are fewer, subsidies, like the general premiums could be higher too, that like everybody gets in the mail in October, warning them that this is coming in November. It's just been this poorly thought out quirk of Obamacare that they set the
That's
period
not a quirk of Obamacare. And you're right. It was Walker.
Well, that it lands in October. Like, but they could have set that.
But that was in the COVID relief bill, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. Now the October, November thing goes back to Obamacare, but yes, it was in the American Rescue Plan.
Because that's when the open enrollment.
Right.
Right. But why?
Now, they didn't have to make it for just 1 year. They didn't.
Exactly.
No, they made all sorts of choices.
But why would they do that? Like, I mean, what kind of lack of foresight? Like, I mean, and again, people forget this, but nobody right now who is listening to me can remember how much the COVID relief bill was for, right? Like, there's nobody out there going like, oh, it was $1.5 trillion.
Right.
Or it was $1.4 trillion. And in fact, in the wake of passing it, the only thing the Republicans were talking about were Dr. Seuss.
That's
for
right.
Like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes.
So you have the Democrats, you know, and this is just sheer incompetence. Like, I know there are people sometimes who I am and say, this is proofs. They like to lose. And it's like, I'm sorry, it doesn't make any sense. Why would they pass it in the first place? Who are they kidding? There's, you know, like, you're not even hoodwinking anybody. You would pass
it. Nobody was watching. Right.
You know, well, but it doesn't make any sense to pass. Like, why would you pass it in the first place if you were going to not do it past that date? But they have these own sense of like 1.5 trillion is the magic number. Everybody was on board at that point. There was no squabble. You know, that was back when Joe Manchin was saying we need maybe a $5 trillion Build Back Better bill.
Yes.
The it's just that the leadership of this party has been so just lacking in strategy and tactics. And, you know, we saw this during the course of the Judiciary Committee hearings. The idea that right now anybody can even think about our Supreme Court nominee without like physically being able to taste the lunacy that came out of the mouths of Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley. Like, that should be, it's not just about getting KBJ onto the Supreme Court. It is about using that as an opportunity to let the American people know that the Republican Party, that, you know, a significant portion of the members of the Judiciary Committee, which is a serious committee, the Republican Party, are completely out of their minds and are racist in their attacks and also just lunatics. And none of that was communicated.
Yeah, and the Republicans in Washington I was talking to were really upset about how that hearing was going for them. And some were criticizing McConnell for, you know, kind of losing control of his troops. McConnell, if you remember, very early on,
yep,
saw the stakes, and he's like, this is not going to be a controversial nomination. Like, he said that out loud. And then you get Lindsey Graham throwing a temper tantrum about Brett Kavanaugh, and then all the other stuff that you talked about, dredging up QAnon practically. Like, nobody believes that any judge is soft on pedophiles. Like, that, you're just not going to sell that. Like, there's nobody out there that's going to buy that, except for the Q nuts, whose entire politics is organized around this idea that there's all these cannibal pedophile things. So Republicans were really frustrated that they're like, we really blew this. Like, this is going to make us look like idiots, especially as we're making gains like two cycles in a row with voters of color, and we're going to do this. But you're right, there's not a whole lot of capitalizing going on it.
I mean, it was it's just stunning. And the idea that you have, you know, Dick Durbin's, you know, extremely soft leadership on that committee, and that Dianne Feinstein and Patrick Leahy, I mean, bless their hearts, but they don't belong on that committee anymore. They're just like, I mean, it's lunacy. Yeah. And frankly, this is where I feel like, you know, you feel the loss of someone like Al Franken on that committee, because he was one of the strongest. And frankly,
Kamala was pretty good.
Yes, absolutely. And you feel the loss of those two.
If you cue her up, like, yeah, like, she knows how to like create a television moment. And Al Franken would have been just annihilating those clowns, just slicing them to pieces.
Yes.
with searing like put downs that would also make you laugh. That would
and
then
the point
then,
is they'd be all over the television.
Right.
All over the television, all viral. There is absolutely, there was no capitalizing on that. The idea that, like, you know, Mitch McConnell could not have asked for a better, you know, sort of Democratic Party to sit on that Judiciary Committee in terms of like not capitalizing on that stuff. And meanwhile, we have Joe Biden's numbers are completely in the toilet. I mean, I guess they're better than Trump's, who's not, which is highly irrelevant at this point. And we've got stories coming out like this Obamacare one where, you know, these numbers are going to could very well end up, you know, creating 3 or 4 million people who are mad about, you know, that they're losing health insurance. There doesn't seem to be any money right now for any type of like COVID testing or shots. My daughter's going to do a performance with her school, and they're requiring, you know, people to get a PCR test. It's a big public school. They're requiring it for this performance. And I'm looking at the numbers now. It's like $125 to get your test back within 48 hours. If you want it quicker than that, a PCR test is like $200. And, you know, I'm hoping that my insurance will cover some of it. But if you don't have insurance or you have subpar insurance, we're making it impossible to get a legitimate test.
Right. And they might not cover that. Like, a lot of plans say that that doesn't count. Like, that they don't test for travel or events or like that they'll
as
specifically
opposed to having to being symptomatic.
Right.
And
so they'll just straight up reject it. And then you can fight them on it. And right. And your life,
it looks like the Senate has come to some agreement, but it means jettisoning almost all of the global vaccination money that we were providing, which, of course, is a bit of a problem. They've shut down Shanghai. It's not like, you know, it's not over. You look at the numbers in New York State, it's up 65% now. Once you get people vaccinated, the implications of that are much, much less severe than they were, you know, a year or two ago. But nevertheless, I mean, this is still exists.
Also, there's no economic reason not to fund those vaccines. Like, it's not going to create inflation in the United States as unless there's massive price gouging among the pharmaceutical companies, which you can manage if you're the government. But so if there's massive price gouging among the pharmaceutical companies, then okay, you might see some inflation in housing prices in like northern New Jersey at the like $2, $3, and $4 million level. Like that kind of inflation you could see. But in general, if you're just using, you know, Federal Reserve money, giving it at cost to pharmaceutical companies who then produce vaccines and then distribute them in Africa, South America, Asia, that does, there's no economic cost to that. If, as long as you have the resources, like as long as you have the materials you need to make the vaccine, but we're just such a broken system that, oh, well, we need more money for PCR tests, so let's take it away from this thing, even though that's completely illogical. You could just do both.
You could just do both. And if you're really actually genuinely worried about, you know, any type of inflationary pressures, there is an argument that, like, look, they're shutting down Shanghai. We're going to feel that at one point.
That's going to drive up prices.
And so, you know, I don't think you could make necessarily a one-to-one connection between, you know, any specific place that you're sending vaccines to. But the more vaccines you get out into the world, the less disruption you're going to have.
Right.
I mean, so this is just, it's just, I don't know. It just seems
right.
Utterly. No,
it pushes the other direction. You're right.
Absurd. Let's talk about something that I know you talked about the other day on Rising. And, there's been a couple of people who have been writing about this, but there was a new report that just came out. I think sometime this week, about Medicare, or I should say the, Medicare Advantage. Mm-hmm. And tell us this report, which, you know, I think we certainly knew, you know, they knew it back during the fight for Obamacare, because there mm-hmm. was, you know, we were aware of like the excessive billing by Medicare Advantage. But tell people what a Medicare Advantage is and then what this report found.
Yeah. And probably, but if your viewers are over 65, they're probably getting either on it or they're getting constant solicitations to be on it, because now, according to this report by the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, 46% of Medicare beneficiaries are on Medicare or on Medicare Advantage. So almost half are in this basically a privatized program. And so the way it works is it was designed to save money, that they'll give you a capitated payment. So for every person of this average health, the company will get $12,000, and then if they can, and which is supposed to be a little bit less than Medicare would pay on average, and then the idea is that their profit comes from their ability to kind of save money, and to do kind of preventive medicine, and like there is a theory in which there's a better way to do medicine, and this was sort of trying to get at it, but we've known for more than 20 years that it isn't really working, because what they do is they say, okay, we're going to get $12,000 for this person, and then we're going to upcode the person. And upcoding means figuring out all kinds of different maladies that these people have that you're not going to treat, but that you can code into your system that makes them seem like they're a more vulnerable person relative to the overall population. But they're actually not. There are entire consultancies that will figure out ways to like look at a person and figure out what codes to put in to make this person seem like they're much sicker than they actually are. So now all of a sudden you're getting $16,000 for this person, whatever the number is. And then you tell the person, we're going to give you, eyeglass coverage, and we're going to give you hearing coverage, we're going to give you dental, and it'll be terrible dental, but you'll get some dental, because they're making so much extra profit off of you that they can afford to give you these teasers to get you into the system. And so people are, and most of them will cover some version of drug prescription drugs. So people don't have to get these like Medigap plans, which, can cost you a little bit extra money to cover different gaps. And so, So they walk away with a ton of extra money. Estimate was maybe $20 billion last year. And people get roughly the same coverage or maybe worse. Because now you have a private insurance company who's invested in trying to prevent you from getting treatment, because then they're going to have to pay for it. Whereas Medicare is much more straightforward. Fee for service. You need service. As long as the doctors like wants to give you the service, like they're basically going to pay for it. They audit here and there to try to keep fraud down. But it's not their job to deny you coverage. Which is that's the job of the private insurance industry.
Or your cat. That's a big cat.
That's a giant cat.
So, all right, just so that people are clear, I mean, on some level, this is sort of like a charter school dynamic, right? Where it's like, we're going to have
Spanish classes and art classes.
Right. And so the money comes out of Medicare. It goes into this Medicare Advantage. And you pay a little bit extra too. Is that right?
Not necessarily.
As an individual, you're not required to. And so this gets offloaded.
The harm is in you might be out of your network. You might not be able to, like, they're going to screw you in other ways, but up front, they're usually going to take care of you.
And they're saying they're offering more services. What it appears that way, because what they have done unbeknownst to you is actually, essentially said, to Medicare, you know what? It turns out that the Sam Cedar was more expensive than we thought. And we're going to bill Medicare, not the $12,000, but the $16,000. And out of that, we're going to offer vision and, you know, dental, and that'll probably cost us maybe $1,500 at most. And so we're making an extra $3,500 on top, or $2,500 on top of what we had already anticipated in making on the $12,000, which may have been another couple of grand or whatever it is. And when Democrats cut those payments in 2010, I think it was, with Obamacare, you had Republicans, and it basically didn't change anything. The services you got from Medicare Advantage were the same at that point, because it was basically realized we're not billing them. And then Republicans attacked the Democrats. I mean, this is the problem with these
sort of cutting Medicare, right?
This is the same, like the analogy is sort of the charters schools. Like, you know, some of it may have been a good idea at the beginning, but inevitably when you have the profit motive in there, it metastasizes and begins to sort of like undercut the viability of the primary program.
And there's another similarity in the way that they both treat desperate people. Like, people need healthcare, people need education, and also it's a, both populations have an asymmetric relationship with the information. Like, so the charter school's going to hire consultants that are going to figure out the ways to get the most money out of the state or out of the city, and to bust the unions and everything else. Whereas all you know as a parent is like, you can look at the test scores online and say like, okay, this seems decent. Whereas, and the same with, in the insurance industry, you're at a real disadvantage trying to compete with the armies of accountants and lawyers and marketers and everything that you're up against.
So how does, what does the Biden administration do about this if they decide that they want to do something about it? I mean, I feel like the lesson that Democrats probably learned is like, we can't cut Medicare Advantage or they're going to run against us. And, you know, like they've done such a poor job, Democrats, of associating themselves with the positive aspects of these programs, because they, and I think in many respects, like if you wanted to associate yourself with the positive aspects of Medicare, for instance, seems to me that what you would have done is in that COVID relief bill, the various ones that have passed the House over the past couple of years, you would allow people to access Medicare as an emergency Medicare X during COVID, and expand it that way. Instead, they used COBRA subsidies, which as a recipient of the health insurance, I see no difference, but it is far more expensive for the country, for the government. I mean, like, just extraordinarily expensive. More expensive.
Yeah.
And, but they were so desperate not to, particularly Pelosi, it seems to me, so desperate not to give Americans a taste of Medicare, and to keep them in the private system, that they were afraid to do that. And of course, like, how do you get political advantage of a program that you have basically marshaled if you're not willing to associate yourself with it?
Right. And John Walker, who I mentioned earlier, who does a lot of healthcare reporting, he suggested this TRICARE plan. It's like, fine, you don't want to do Medicare. There's a plan of TRICARE, which is connected to the military, which is, it's up and running. It's got a massive administrative system already set up. You could actually, like, Medicare could be difficult to absorb all those people. Like, TRICARE, they can come in a month. Everybody would have TRICARE, and medical systems know how to deal with TRICARE, and it's awesome coverage. It's even better than Medicare, actually. Just bring them in. But yeah, they didn't do that. The only way they're now they're boxed in because half of seniors have this. And so I think that played a role in Bernie's inability to get hearing and glasses and dental into this plan, because you had this massive lobby of Medicare Advantage that knows that if Medicare gets better, then the little gimmicks that they're using to get you over into their private plans aren't going to sell as much. Like if Medicare's the premiums are low, the gap's filled, it's got dental, vision, hearing, then what's this person like? They go door to door, they mail, email, Facebook. Like, it's a relentless marketing operation, which is why it's grown 10% every year the last 3 years. If you don't have anything to offer, if Medicare's good, then you're not going to get people your way. And in fact, people will head back to Medicare because they'll be like, oh, this network sucks. Like, I'm in a private plan that's screwing me. Once they're in it and for a while, and then they can talk to their friends, they're like, just go back to regular Medicare. It's better. And so they're really their only solution, really, I think, is making Medicare better. Like, that's how
the only way to do this is to just up the value of Medicare so that you're basically drowning Medicare Advantage in the bathtub, as it were.
Yeah. And there are a lot of smart and well-meaning people who work in the kind of Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services who are trying to, like, get a lot of the fraud and abuse out of Medicare Advantage. And so giving them a lot, like giving them like 50 more, like, interns and staffers and, to, like, throw some serious muscle at it couldn't hurt. But you're nibbling at the edges because they have, just billions to, like, hire all of the smartest people to run all the different, equations about
and,
how to.
And this can only be done legislatively, right? Or can it, or can't it, does Biden.
No, CMS can operate independently. Yeah.
Is there any executive action that can be taken to increase the offerings of Medicare?
Yes. You could, because they do it constantly. They're constantly adjusting, what they pay for different services. So, but you would need legislation to add things like hearing, dental, vision. You could pay more for knee replacements, and you can mess around with, different provider payments.
But you can't offer anything that is like, we're going to have dental by executive action. So it's a legislative issue which reminds me of something I want to talk to you about, because you guys at The Intercept done and everything legislative now has to be, okayed and signed off by President Manchin. You guys did have done over the past couple of years, I guess year and a half or so, some great reporting on Joe Manchin. Everything I know about his daughter's sort of like trajectory and getting her her University of West Virginia sort of bona fides, yes. And then her getting a job where she's gouging people with insulin was a function of your reporting. And there was and his lobbying as he became governor on behalf of the coal-fired power plant that he ended up being, or ended up being his sole customer of his gob or gob or whatever they call it.
Gob, yes.
There was a piece that filled in some of the other parts of this in the New York Times, incredibly mm-hmm. well reported. And it seems to me that, like, if you are a state senator and you are lobbying on behalf of a coal-fired power plant to get a waiver because it's going to be spewing out more mercury close to another power plant that's also spewing out mercury, and you buy an old mine on a Tuesday in the morning that is going to provide all of this coal to that same power plant, and then sell it to that same power plant that same day for $120,000 more, and then make a subsequent deal later to get a 1% sort of vig on everything they ever sell, the power they sell out of there. That to me seems incredibly corrupt. And where is, like, how do we call the cops? Like, where do we dial 911 to? Because this guy's just showing up at work every day. And it seems to me that,
like Will Smith just sitting down at the table.
Yeah, except for we're starting to see some, you know, blowback on that. I know you wanted to get the slap in there, but honestly, like, is this like the Department of Justice? Like, I don't think it's going to happen in West Virginia. But I mean, isn't there somebody who's going to come in? Like, isn't there? I know that in New York State, it was the Eastern District of Manhattan at the USA's office that would do public corruption. Shouldn't there be a U.S. attorney's office in West Virginia that is going like, hey, wait a second, what's the statute of limitations on this? Maybe there isn't one, and let's look into this.
Yeah, and Daniel Bogoslaw has another piece up for us a couple weeks ago that lays out the different attempts by federal authorities to probe people in his inner circle, and including related to – so you laid out all of that insane corruption. Then later, as governor, he – pushed for and successfully got a rate increase on his own neighborhood, like his people, not just West Virginians, but particularly his home base. He pushed through a rate increase. So people every single month were paying money, extra money, for this gob that he was pumping out of the ground and then getting 1% on the other end.
Yes, it's amazing. Like, he's like, every dollar that he approved, he would get a penny of that back.
Just from that. And then he was also selling it. Right.
And he was selling it all in the first place.
And without the rate increase.
The reason why they got the rate increase was because we're using substandard coal. So we need to increase our rate.
Right.
We get that substandard coal. Oh,
his thing would have gone. His thing would have gone bankrupt without that. Yeah. Yeah, he would be. His whole operation would not have been financially kind of reasonable without that rate increase. Because it's crap.
So, have you sent a reporter down to West Virginia's U.S. Attorney's office and say, like, what are you guys doing about this?
We've had a guy there for a couple of weeks. One of the prosecutors who looked into this then became like a Manchin ally after deciding not to.
Oh, that's weird.
Not to push charges. That's in one of the stories. So yeah, how about that? Isn't that neat?
Also, now, where is this job? I mean, one can only imagine how that has benefited them. It is just amazing the level of corruption that this is. And
it's comical. If this was going on in any other country, we would just be laughing at like the banana corruption level of it. The banana republic level of it. Be like, this isn't even like trying. Like, you know, in the U.S., we do our corruption in a sophisticated way where we call it campaign contributions and we have lobbyists and we hire people after they're done their jobs. That's like the first world impressive way to do, sophisticated way to do corruption. This isn't even that. This is just straight up.
Is it because his name's not Trump, or is it because this is happening on a state level and we just don't comprehend like the like how that level of corruption?
Yeah, I think West Virginia has the resource curse type of corruption that you see in all these other countries that are, you know, fossil fuel based, that where all of the power is around this resource and your relationship to that resource. And so the politics just becomes like insanely corrupt. And you see that pattern play out in, you know, almost everywhere, not quite everywhere, but almost everywhere that pumps a lot of kind of just money out of the ground. And it's West Virginia, so nobody cares. It's like, yeah, like, no, it's part that, like, part of that kind of bias against Appalachia, that there's very little media. The Pittsburgh paper is the one that had to bust his daughter, you know, faking having an executive master's degree, because Pittsburgh's pretty close to that area.
So let me ask you this. In terms of, like, and this is a little bit a field from that, but maybe not. Like, do you think that we're going to see political reporters who basically attribute Joe Manchin's votes and proclamations to, like, a moderate ideology or whatever that is, supposedly, or a lack of ideology, but that it's, you know, and even they know it's an ideology, right? They're saying he's a moderate or a conservative Democrat, whatever it is. Do you think at one point they're just going to say, like, he's just corrupt and everything he does is either a direct result of his corruption or as a fig leaf for his corruption?
I mean, you're starting to see some of it. Like, you've started to see at least in some print articles. Like, the Times did that big investigative piece, which is great. What's even better is if they start to incorporate that into their other piece, because you've seen this pattern a ton, where the Times will do some incredible investigative journalism, but then their daily coverage will just continue as if that awesome piece that might win a Pulitzer, you know, never even happened.
Right. Like, Joe Manchin is very worried about inflation. Therefore, he doesn't want GOB to be to be out, you know, to be regulated.
Did you read
out
your Sunday paper?
Right. It has nothing to do with the money he's making from it.
That we wrote about 2 days ago. But so you actually are starting to see the normal coverage start to refer to his coal holdings and his coal business. He's been asked about it a couple times in the hallway. But there's a politeness element to it where it's just untoward. Like, you're not supposed to question the motivations. And this is a bipartisan thing. Like, parties are like, there's still this norm that you can say whatever you want about your opponent, but you shouldn't question their motivations. And by motivations, they mean donors and
I feel
and
like
money.
Sherrod Brown came very close to saying it, but couldn't even say the words. Right. I can't remember the context, but it happened about a month and a half ago. He's
right.
Like, what?
They get very close to it, and then they start to get euphemistic. And one reporter who pressed him like very directly on it, Manchin just said, you best change the subject.
Or I'm going to what? Run you over with my Maserati?
Push you into traffic on Constitution Avenue. I don't know. Well, he did save Arthur Delaney from getting run over on Constitution Avenue.
Oh, is that right?
No, I did. Yeah, it was this big scrum, and Arthur wasn't looking, and the scrum's crossing Constitution Avenue, and there's some taxis barreling down, and Manchin grabbed him and pulled him back.
There you go.
Like, 2 weeks later, then Manchin yelled at him and said, "You have no idea what you're talking about, and how dare you?" And it's so.
Well,
but yeah, that's your. You know, if you push. You get told, you know, he'll point at you like he pointed at this reporter like a student who had stepped out of line or something.
And here is the fundamental dilemma right now that the Democrats have is that with all of what I've just said, Joe Manchin still makes the difference in terms of like a Supreme Court seat. Joe Manchin still makes the difference in terms of what 100 federal judges that have been sat. Joe Manchin still makes the difference in terms of. Of getting, you know, most
funding
the government, getting most of the of Biden's nominees there. I mean, this is, it just seems to me that maybe this is again a failure of leadership. It's one thing to be polite in public, but it's another. You know, I mean, there's no reason why Chuck Schumer can't be walking down to Joe and go, Joe, like, look. I'm getting so much grief about what's going on in your home state. Like, you got to give me a little bit more to work with here, buddy.
And he's like, do I have to give you more, Chuck?
Well, I mean, then Chuck goes, actually, no. Okay. You're fine.
Yes. Never mind.
Can I get you a sandwich? Can I get you a sandwich? Or maybe can I? Do you need your cleaning taken out? Let me see if I can get your cleaning done. That's the problem, right? I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, right. The only time that they'll, if they were going to discipline him, it would be when they're already in the minority, when they don't have anything to take from him.
Right. Well,
and this is a case where the power dynamics are defined by there being 50 senators. Like if there were 52, you know, and people say, well, you just want more Democrats. No, if there were 52, he has less power.
Yep.
Like then he has to organize Sinema and the other two, but then Schumer can individually go, let's say there's four like Manchin type figures. But then Schumer can individually go to each one and be
Schumer
like,
Schumer has the ability to put one of them in the fulcrum essentially and say like, you're the swing vote, not him. He's gone.
Right. And what you're do you want? Swing vote. What do you want for being a
what
swing vote?
What do you
vote?
Want?
Cause like there's going to be $1 billion that builds a needless weapons factory in somebody's state.
Exactly.
Who's going to get it?
Yep.
Cause somebody's going to get it. Is it going to be you?
It's not out of the question that there could be a pickup or two for Democrats in the Senate. I think the House looks, you know, a little bit bleak, although, you know, from a gerrymandering standpoint, it's not nearly as bad as it looked like it was at the beginning of the cycle, in large part because I think people were very conscious of it. And, you know, we'll see what happens with this New York state ruling in the New York map. But I have a feeling that's going to be dealt with on appeal. But right now we have, you know, at least some parity, not so much in the state houses, but very much in terms of like the congressional districts. But
although
the
not
numbers are just so bad, and I just don't know what the Democrats run on, frankly.
Right. They've got to do this final package that they're talking about. If they do the final package with climate change, Obamacare, drug price negotiations, tax increases on the rich, like then they at least have that would change the mood and the emotions and the like. If the feel of it, like right now, like just the feel is just killing them. Like the vibes are just absolutely brutal to the point where you could see like with headwinds like this, even, you know, so let's say if Fetterman can win in a normal year, now he's got like a 6-point headwind. He's got to run against Shaheen in New Hampshire, Warnock. And George Kelly, like, and then you start to have people who you don't expect to have tight races, like a Michael Bennett in Colorado or Duckworth in Illinois, or even Patty Murray and Ron Wyden, probably safe, but like in a really bad year, if you get like a Glenn Youngkin type, it could be a complete wipeout if they don't give people some reason to care. Because right now, people just don't care.
Well, that was fun. Ryan Graham, thanks so much for your time today.
You got it.
Are you ready to announce your things that are going on at Rising or no?
No, they're still working out the details, but it looks like I'm going to go to Friday morning to do like a Friday show. We'll see how it shakes out. I think that would be fun. Actually,
yeah, there you go. Friday morning, people could tune into you and they could turn over, they could tune right into the Majority Report.
There you go. That's a day of incredible programming.
Well, thanks for the shot of your cat, Ryan Grimm, Washington Bureau Chief for The Intercept. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, folks. I may read some IMs, and like I say, we're going to have a shorter show, but we're going to replay some stuff that we've done, you know, just in celebration of what do you call it, April Fool's Day today. Is there one of these clips though that we should do before?
Charles Payne's probably the candidate.
Oh yes, yeah, Payne, and then maybe I was thinking of Stinchfield too, but who knows? That guy's a lunatic. So Joe Biden has announced, and we should also say there was a, what did pass the other day in the Senate, just to give you some goodish news, aside from the vote and the Amazon vote, which I think is good news. I don't have it, but we had David Dayan on the program to talk about updating some maritime laws that would deal with the logistics problems that we have in this country. And the Senate, I think, took some action on it yesterday. We'll have more on that on Monday. But there is some things that are happening that could theoretically help ease the inflationary pressures that are coming from logistics problems that we have, both because of specifically the way our supply chain is set up in this country, and obviously because around the world you have different shutdowns that are taking place because of COVID, and I guess you know our existing supply lines were upset during COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So that's good news. One of the things that Joe Biden is doing to respond to the inflationary pressures that people have, despite the fact that we have, you know, 430,000 new jobs, unemployment numbers are going down. But if you've got to pay an extra $2 a gallon, $1.50 a gallon to drive yourself to work, it's not necessarily make you feel like, you know, things are improving in any way, not to mention all the things that we've talked about on this program today. But Joe Biden announced that he's going to be releasing oil from the Strategic Reserve on a daily basis until late October, which just so happens to be right before the election. Here is how Charles Payne and Fox's Sandra Smith reacted to this and to the reports that corporate profits have soared to their highest since 1950, which implies, in fact, if it doesn't imply, it directly shows that there is a lot of profiteering and price gouging going on. But here is the way they respond to it on Fox.
We create a narrative going into the midterm elections that we can put this problem on somebody else. You know, you put up a chart at the beginning of the show. If you had a chart going back to November 4th, it's November 3rd, day after the election, when President Biden won at crude oil, $25 a barrel. Since then, it's gone to $130 a barrel. It immediately reacted to what President Biden said his agenda was. His number one thing was to get rid of, to destroy this industry. He is not a friend to the industry, but guess what? Being an enemy to this industry is crushing the American public. We had you read
pause it, pause it, pause it, pause it. You know, there's something else that went that took place around November 3rd, too, was that we are just on the verge of getting people more vaccinated. And people are starting to emerge from their homes and engage in commerce more and buying things. And that's also happening around the world at that time. And so we go from a time where nobody's using any gas to when people are. So it wasn't that the oil industry was so worried about
Joe Biden's idea campaign rhetoric.
We're on the cusp of a huge green revolution. No, that's not what it was. It was we had a much less severe pandemic going on in terms of our economic activity. But continue.
Industry is crushing the American public. We had you referenced some economic data out this morning, personal income and spending. And by the way, food inflation we haven't gotten to. So between food inflation and gasoline inflation, households are getting absolutely annihilated.
Before you go, because we're about out of time, I just want to put this Bernie Sanders tweet on profits
for the big oil companies? Because I know you have been talking a lot about this. He says, well, hey, look at the profits of these big companies. ConocoPhillips up 1,400%. Chevron, ExxonMobil, as the gas price increases 63% to $4.24. Your response?
I'm doing a big segment today on corporate profits because they were the best last year since 1950.
But,
profits,
yep.
Corporate profits overall.
I got
you. Know what I say? Great, fantastic. I love it. Profits is not a four-letter word in a capitalist society. This is how we engine. That's how we generate opportunity and prosperity for all Americans. And by the way, ExxonMobil last year, their profit margins
were 10%. Charles, people are going to hear you say that, and they're going to say, wait a second then. With all those profits, there's going to be room for gas prices, oil prices to come down a little bit.
I'm confused about that.
That they should somehow share their profits.
Because the year before that, when their profits went down 50%,
there you go.
Did anybody come to their rescue?
That's the point I heard you
right.
make. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were losing money during the pandemic.
Right. And then, by the way, I was just going to say, their profits, even with their profits last year, ExxonMobil's margins were 10%. Right. 10 years ago, they were double that.
We got them all fired up. And we're
I'm all fired up.
Got to send him on his way and do his own show.
Hey, right, the amazing. It's just amazing that the guy is able to spend the first like three quarters of his comments bemoaning the pressure that the American public is feeling because of gas prices and how this was all a function of the idea of a Green New Deal. And then pivot on, you know, look, why wouldn't he give credit to Joe Biden for the highest profit since 1950s? And then the idea that like, well, I mean, they deserve to price gouge now because they didn't get, they only had 10% profit.
Yeah.
The year before. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, what he means by opportunity and whatever he says, like, how about I just get cheaper gas? That's what I'm looking for. Like, the profits are an avenue towards some sort of nebulous form of like the American dream. How about instead we just force them to use their profits to lower our gas?
I mean, and if it's a national security issue, again, let's nationalize this stuff.
Yep.
Let's take control over price caps. Price caps. These oil companies want to sell their product here. They can. You want to give them a break because they had a tough year last year? 10.5% profit. How's that? 10% profit. Not bad. All right. Oh, we have some late breaking video of, let's play this, of, Amazon organizers, it appears that the Amazon labor union, it's an independent labor union. It got some help from Unite Here in New York. It also got some help from United Food and Commercial Workers Union in terms of representation at the National Labor Relations Board and some organizers. But this was an independent union drive by members of Amazon Labor. They come out of the National Labor Relations Board office in Brooklyn. The vote count just wrapped at 2,654 to 2,131. It appears to be a done deal. Let's watch this video. This is the first Amazon warehouse in the country, actually series of warehouses, that will be unionized. Great stuff. Great stuff. It's going to be interesting to see if this sparks a bunch of union drives around the country coming out of those Amazon warehouses. And the Bessemer union vote, again, much closer than it was last time. And yeah. So hopefully we...
yeah, let's see what happened to these warehouses. What's happening to Starbucks right now?
Yep. We're going to see more of that Starbucks again. Don't forget, in Astoria tonight, 6 p.m., Astoria Boulevard, Starbucks workers will be holding a rally. So head down there. There's at least, you know, some momentum right now. All right. I'm going to read some IMs, and then I am being sort of leveraged to play a critic's video. And we will do that in just a moment. I'm going to read some of the IMs. I can't read this entire one about Fetterman. But another Matt says, regarding Fetterman, Jacobin did a piece this week exposing the smear campaign funded by insurance companies that seek to sink his candidacy and stall Connor Lamb. Foot soldiers in my town are already on the move. Our local Democratic Party is already spreading lies about Fetterman over social media, inviting Lamb to speak here. This is a solid red district, yet the Democratic Party actively undermines all progressive leftist talk and action. I don't have time to go into it, but they get money from Philly to keep leftists from gaining influence. This is not a conspiracy. We should all pay more attention to Pennsylvania, but the liberals here hate Fetterman as well as the leftists in general, and they are in control. I'm worried that despite his lead, Fetterman will end up like Nina Turner and India Walton once the DNC machine gets rolling. Well, I don't think they're able to do what was done with India Walton. I don't think you get a nominee for the Senate against a, you know, we saw this in Connecticut where there was support for Joe Lieberman to run as an independent against, I can't even remember his name now. He's the governor of Ned Lamont back in 2008, maybe it was, or six. But you don't have an incumbent this time. And so I think it's okay to, and it is definitely a worry. No one should get cocky. Fetterman can see this coming, and people just got to get out there and keep working on his behalf. Stuart, Sam, remember you're good enough, you're smart enough, and doggone people like you. Thank you very much. Rory Gatto. Hey, perverts. The National Libertarian Party chair is named Henchman, Joseph Darcy Bishop Henchman, the most aptly named person in history. Okay. Truck Nuts. Hey, MR Crew. I just wanted to say that the way that awful woman was questioning the trans child in that clip yesterday was a bit triggering. As a childhood sexual assault survivor in the 90s, I have to say the way the child was being questioned was very much the same way I was questioned at 6 years old after being assaulted. I would even venture to say the questioning was sexual harassment, especially coming from the Save the Children Party. You guys are right. These people have no respect for the rights and consent of children. I'm not seeing anyone else with these experiences say anything about this, so I wanted to put it out there for others who may be struggling watching this too. Solidarity, friends. Thank you. Appreciate that. I far did. Will Casual Friday also mean lack of undershirt Friday henceforth? Tomolo Fink, do I have Emma's permission to replace Hump Day with Friends Day Wednesday? What the? Sam's de minimis penis. I want to slip in one tiny thing from yesterday. The main problem I have with reality TV dating shows wasn't that it was mentioned. It was in the way it reinforces the classic Hollywood ideal of the one perfect person waiting out there for you. That you would have to recognize on first sight, which would make you complete and without whom a woman isn't fulfilled and a man isn't a full man. I can't even read the rest of this, the dating shows, because I have no interest in those. Sorry. Clown School. Hold on a second. There's New Mexico. We will talk more about what New Mexico is doing over the next couple of days. Daredevil. Hey, Sam, I'm helping my friend research postal banking for a college essay advocating for its implementation. I only became aware of this idea and many others because of your show. Off the top of your head, are there any underappreciated points about this issue you think that should be discussed more? I don't know which ones you appreciate, but, you know, Dayan has gone through a lot of this stuff, so make sure you check that out. Helping people helps the post office, which is an integral part of our society, and it helps people who have who are basically unbanked. And It'll improve both on that ends. Left-handed stranger, I just read until you get bored. I find it cringe when people message or call into the show to say, talk more about this, talk more about that, especially when it's a subject y'all touched on not too long ago. Don't get me wrong. Tips are great. Updates and stuff are cool. But, bro, if you want more content for something, pick one of the many, many book-related interviews one of them have done, then buy the damn book. I find it frustrating, too, to get IMs like that. Like, you know, do you want every show to be doing, you know, exactly the same thing? We do something that's fairly unique, I think, with other relative to other shows, which is that we introduce people to people who have done deep academic research. There's a couple of shows out there that do it. I don't know if they do it on a daily basis. And, you know, there's other shows out there that are covering certain things. I can understand people's frustration with that, but I like tips and you know, people's suggestions. That's good. Keep them coming. Between the 101 and the 5, there are some awesome new representatives, but the left has really not gotten any senators. We really only have Bernie, I think. It's so absurd. Demian, oh my God, this country is absurd. West Texas Dem, the pharmacy I got my booster at charged my insurance company $2,024? Jesus, jibber jabber. Hey, I'm our crew. Can I get a shofar for successfully defending my dissertation last week? The forms are in, and I'm officially a PhD in chemistry. Wow, congratulations. Congratulations. All right, three more of these, and then we're going to go Punch Drunk Pulpit. One of my many regrets in life, and one of the biggest ones, I'll never get to see an Eddie Murphy-style comedy where Michael plays all the characters. Left is best. All right, we're going to have some Michael in a bit, but first, I have been harassed by the Substacker at Pawsit on a regular basis. We played their video that they thought was so damning of me at our Brooklyn show. They insisted that we cut out things and didn't play it in context. So here is the full 8-minute video from the Substacker at Pawsit that purports to expose me in somehow. I am not afraid, and I will not back down to this type of assault. And so here it is. You decide.
Hold on one second. I'm just checking my stocks. Just going to make one Dogecoin trade.
Hi, I'm Ronald Reagan. Many of you may recognize me from my hilarious calls into the fun half of the Majority Report internet show. But my true passion is citizen journalism, fighting for the First Amendment, and fighting back against cancel culture and MSDNC cucks like Sam Cedar. Tonight, I'm excited to announce the launching of my very own Substack called Pawsit. Pawsit, we will be asking, but not necessarily answering, all the biggest questions of the day, like, why isn't anyone writing about this? Does canceling Dave Chappelle make Democrats the real racists? Why won't these Polish border guards reveal military secrets to me, a guy in sweatpants? And more. I know people are saying, but Reagan, doesn't your minor in communications make you overqualified for Substack citizen journalism? To which I respond, probably. When it comes to Sam Cedar, no one said it better than journalism doer Glenn Greenwald when he said, Sam is everything shitty about liberals in one hunched over, lying, screaming, banal, trite human container, like a one-stop shop museum for what is so repellent about liberal discourse. Well, at my Substack, Pawsit, we'll be a one-stop shop museum for everything that is good. When I started Pawsit, I knew that exposing Sam Cedar was not going to be easy. Sure, he lists his phone number and repeats it throughout every show and has done so for many, many years in order to encourage weirdos and others to call in and debate him. But unfortunately, he engages in the following unfair debate tactics, which makes calling in virtually meaningless. Right.
So this is how you win debates, by interrupting the point?
No.
Sam, you're interrupting me.
I understand.
You have to let me get out of complete thought.
Wait a second. I want to hear about that other paradigm.
Hold on, Sam. Hold on.
1 million subscribers, and you have what? 6 or 7 million subscribers?
Let me answer. Can I answer your question? Can I answer your question? Can I answer your question? Sure. You want me to answer your question?
There's a bunch of people I would cancel. Who are high right now, dude?
No. So yes. What are you basing that on?
Finish the sentence, Sam?
If I could finish the sentence? Not have any values that you stand upon?
No. I don't.
I knew I was going to have to expose Sam another way. I also knew that as a boomer, Sam was particularly susceptible to online and telephone fraud.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah, hi. This is Todd from the accounting, one of your accountants, one of the new accountants on your account.
Todd?
Yeah, I'm a new guy. Just got assigned to the account, and I was looking over some things. I think I've got a couple of ideas that would be great for you.
Great. Todd, we've been on the phone for too long already. What? Just tell me.
Got a beeline on stuff that's been confiscated by the police from homeless people, especially camping gear, mason jars, pup tents, used toothbrushes, things like that. We can set these things up in a hipster boutique and they sell like hotcakes. You're looking at a massive return on investment.
Right.
One of these pup tents we can get for 50 cents and turn around and sell it for $500. So, I mean, you're looking at 100x easy.
All right, fine. I love it.
Now, some people want to discuss the ethical side of this and whether or not it's quote unquote fair to the homeless.
Whatever. I don't care. As long as it makes me money, I don't care.
Great. I am going to need some papers signed. Is there a way I could maybe come over and
talk to Bradley or one of my people to get the address? This is wasting too much time for me on details.
Hey, thanks for having me over to your house. This is really nice.
Oh, this is not my place. This is my maid's place. They split the chores between the cleaning and the cooking and the driving to the extent that I need to drive anywhere.
Right.
In the helicopter.
There must be a lot of subscribers to your podcast show for you to, you know, afford all that.
Yeah, well, I do have a big subscriber. It's called Peacock. Maybe you've heard of it.
No, I was just saying, it's too bad that the Peacock thing didn't work out for you.
I think it did. I would say it did. I still get paid. It's much easier to just have it not be official.
But they have a lot of, don't they have a lot of say over what you can do?
Oh, yeah. They do most of the writing. They choose adjectives. They'll choose...
Like stunning?
That was totally them. Baked into the cake.
What about when...
I didn't even know what
that
meant.
Unbelievable?
They did some focus group testing on that, apparently. Like, I was just... I think one day I was like, this is unbelievable. And they said, no.
They basically own you, but there's got to be something in it for you, too, right? I mean,
yeah. Money. A lot of that comes in Bitcoin. Satisfaction. Just in the sense that you know that somebody cares about you. Because the vaccine they're giving out to most people is actually, do you remember WiMAX?
No.
WiMAX was, they were going to set up a bunch of towers and create a sort of like a Wi-Fi net.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a much easier way of doing it. It's just like distributed Wi-Fi.
But through people.
I mean, people are everywhere.
Like on the money side, I mean, you must be doing really good.
This does not grow on trees.
Really happy for you.
I don't care. Doesn't mean anything to me. Well, I'm happy for you that you're happy.
Like, what about just your fans or your listeners? You don't care about any of them?
Not really. You know, it's nice. I occasionally get a like on Twitter from Joy Reid. That's... feels good. Stephanie Rule. She's smart. So, on Sundays, I go up to Connecticut, spend some time with Henry Kissinger, and most Sundays, take a walk. There's an aviary up there that we like to look at condors.
Wow.
He's great. You say Ziggy, he'll say, I'm zagging. And so people probably should have like said, you're too little of a war criminal. And then he would have been less of one. They pushed him into it, is my point. In many respects, he became a war criminal just because people were saying that he was a war criminal. He's like, well, I might as well be one. If everybody's saying I am, I might as well get the fun out of it. I was going to be very antagonistic towards MSNBC. And then someone once said that, like, you're an MSNBC guy. And then I was like, I'm going to be more MSNBC. So most of it.
There it is. Oh, he didn't do the outro on that one. I guess he saved it for a different one. But that's at the Posit Substack. If anybody wants to check out more of that garbage that he's peddling over there. First off, just a couple of things I just want to refute in that. I am not a boomer. I am not a boomer. At one point he implied that I was. And then there's probably some other things that were inaccurate in there too. But the biggest one was I am not a boomer. And so I want that absolutely. People can verify that very easily. And I think it's indicative of the type of work that that person does. So, meanwhile, moving along, Tahiti Brown asked for a, shofar for Carol, and here it is. All right, let's play this clip. This was brought to my attention just the other day. As you know, we were supposed to be doing a show in Boston on January 16th. That show got pushed to May 15th. And Bradley is going to reach out to this person to see, now that they have laid down this gauntlet, to see if, as they call it, now that they've laid down this gauntlet, if they want to put their money, or not even their money, if they want to put their mouth where their mouth is really what it is. Yeah. We found this.
This one of Hinkle's buddies or something? Or who is this guy?
All I can tell you about this guy is that years and years ago, when we had to take a day off at the time and we didn't have the opportunity to pre-record anything, my manager at the time, who I've since fired because he obviously had no idea what I would do on a daily basis, suggested that we take this guy who does a radio show, substitute their show for ours on that one day. And since then, I have tried to stay as far away as possible and had, blocked this person on Twitter and had muted. And yet, every now and then, it crops up. This is, just play the clip. We are back. It's 25 past the hour. You're listening to the Ken and Ken Show. You got me, the Deuce, the undisputed king of the third wave of conservative talk in the Stoughton area. Also including the South Shore area, at least parts of it. And soon via the internet, the wide world web, we're going to be in the New Bedford area as well. Of course, joining me as usual, the new dork. And as usual, completely AWOL is Scotso, day 512 of the guy never showing up at work.
Typical.
Typical. Calls in one day with the sniffles, never shows up again. So screw that guy. Whatever, wherever he is.
Some vacation with Fauci.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Whatever. Going around talking about an IROC-Z, and then all of a sudden you never hear from the guy again. Anyways, so I was reading the paper, and check this out. According to the paper, on January 16th, just 10 days after the holiday of January 6th, you know that guy who crashed the debate with Steven Crowder? The huge troll guy?
Troll guy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that fembot from the majority report, which I happen to call the minority report because they have so many black people on. They are coming to the Wilbur Theater, apparently, 10 days after the holiday of January 6th on January 16th. And I don't know what's going on there, some type of like gay pride parade or something. But they're coming in and with their femme show, their soy boy stuff. And, you know, talking about all their being, you know, liberal stuff.
Not the Wilbur.
Yeah. They're besmirching the Wilbur Theater. In fact, they, as far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't step a foot into Massachusetts. And so here's my here's my challenge for that guy. He thinks he's so smart. He wants to have a debate. I'll debate you. I'll debate you on any topic you want.
Game on.
How about you know, you got your your Bill Gates and your George Soros is flying you in on their private vaccine jet or whatever it is, while you're coming in on the Lolita Express or whatever. I'll debate you. But of course, we'll never hear from him because he's a soy boy and he's a fembot and he's afraid probably of actually defending his positions, which are completely authoritarian and disgusting.
I think we should just storm the Wilbur.
Yeah, maybe we'll just go by the Wilbur at that point. We'll see. Anyways, we got some other stuff to talk about. Fauci. Everybody loves Anthony Fauci. I'll tell you this about that guy. He's like a puppy molester or something. I don't know what he's doing. All right, so I've told Bradley to reach out. We have not heard anything back yet. A lot of people like to talk a big game and then do very little to back it up. So I have said many times in this program, the number 646-257-3920. We're not taking calls today, but just about every other day we do. You want to call in, debate me about something, happy to do it. You want to email the show at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And you have a platform that you want me to come on to debate, I do my best to answer. We got a lot of people that's backed up, but I will take the time to do it. And I don't know if we'll consider it about when we go up to the Wilbur Theater and see if we want to do that with them. So that's that. People can go check out.
Or we need to bump up the security, one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous. All right. So it is April Fool's Day. And to celebrate, we're not going to play an April Fool's joke. We're going to play a, it's going to be a repeat of a show that was done, that we saw during Halloween that we thought was pretty funny. Maybe not intentionally, but we thought it was funny. So for April Fool's, we're going to play this and sign off. How long is this, Matt?
48 minutes.
48 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
Wowza. All right. Well, here it is. And we will see you on Monday.
Welcome back to the Rage Against the Corporate Sellout Hour. I'm Donnie Bruce. With me, as always, is Todd Snowflake and the Mopey Progressive. How is everybody?
Terrible as usual.
Terrible as usual, says the Mopey Progressive. And, of course, we got Todd Snowflake on the line. Got a lot to get to today. But, of course, for the special power hour, I got to first warn you, you're about to enter caution, you're about to enter a no fucking sellout zone. And joining me via Skype, he's a journalist. He's a guy who's done more to expose the corruption at the DNC than practically anybody. He's an independent. He's a guy who's also recently, we're going to talk about it in a minute, he's getting smeared a lot by so-called progressives. I call them faux fucking aggressives because they're not, and they promote war. A.A. Seaman is with us from Skype. A.A., thank you for being here.
Thank you, Donnie. I just, as you know, I'm a journalist and an editor and an author and a radio personality, a producer and an auteur, showrunner, a certified public accountant, day laborer, too, and a homemaker. I also do some search engine optimization and as well as solution coordinator and a content strategist and a user experience magistrate.
So AA, you do so many things, but one of the things we know you for is exposing the corruption of the DNC. And so you go on all sorts of platforms.
And I also creative director, yes.
And also a creative, wow. So that's amazing. So you go on a lot of different outlets to talk about the corruption of the DNC because, as we know, Bernie Sanders was going to win the election. He didn't blow the fire alarm, so they stole it, and now Donald Trump is president. But yesterday, or last week, I should say, you were on a show. I don't listen to this show. Apparently it's called The Eternal Jew, which I guess is kind of a weird name for a show. I don't know. I don't listen to it. But you were there to talk about corruption in the DNC and how to end wars, and now the left's now they're smearing you.
Yeah, they are. Okay, on the negative side, they're against Jews, but they are also against war and appreciate all the corruption that's happened at the DNC. And so they have a plan to end war. It just happens to be involving the Jews not creating so many wars, but we're all on the same side and we have to be able to make those type of alliances or we're not going to end war.
Right. And then they say we should work with Rachel Maddow, even though she's calling for war every single night. And then you go on and then you say, oh, well, the Pittsburgh shooter was used to be a patron or whatever the fuck of the show you were on. But then people will say that. I say it's the narcissism of small difference, like Chris Hedges. We could come together, whether you're saying police shouldn't shoot you if you're Mexican at the border, which we don't like. But maybe also you believe in the protocols of the Elders of Zion. But we could come together because we don't want fucking corruption and war. And now they're smearing you for it.
Well, I just finished making a video where I commented on the video made by Jason over at the Inclusionary Revolutionary and the video that he made commenting on the anonymous unanimous dissent video, which, of course, was a comment on Left or Our Own Devices that Ken had done over there, commenting on the fascist fuckers video that was a critique of what Anna Kasparian said. And so people can see
Anna
that.
Anna Kasparian.
Yes, at my channel, A.A. Seaman, at YouTube.
A.A. Seaman, it's just so important we look at his videos if you want to understand what happened at the DNC. He's been top of it from the beginning and also what will happen next.
The media has let go of this story. I am still chasing down some leads about the DNC's involvement with Vince Foster, but we can talk about that in a moment.
With Vince Foster? Whoa.
Yes.
I didn't even know about that
one. I will have an exclusive on this probably soon.
Whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So I have to look for that. So I want to play a little piece of tape for us, everybody here in studio and for AA. Because, you know, I keep hearing from other channels like Mini MSNBC, and I actually don't see the Mini MSNBC clip that we're going to play on this list about the Supreme Court, but I hope we have it. But we're going to go another direction first. So You keep hearing about how the Democratic Party, they're going to change. Progressive media is going to get better. Bernie Sanders is saying we should work inside the party, even though they stole it from him.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. It's fucking disgusting. He didn't blow the fire alarm. So now the Democrats run everything and they promote war. But I call him
Bernie sellout Sanders.
Yes, because he's a fucking sellout. And we're going to get to him soon. But first, maybe, I don't know, maybe Chris Hayes, he used to be a labor reporter. He used to report on labor. Maybe he's on it. Here's Chris Hayes just the other night. Let's see what he had to say.
Good evening from New York. I'm Chris Hayes. Almost every day we see new evidence that members of the president's inner circle have been willing to auction off American foreign policy to the highest bidder. And that might be, more than anything, the story of the corruption of this presidency.
Corruption. I didn't hear any mention of the fucking Clinton Global Initiative or Nancy Pelosi. Do I have my hearings going? Did I miss something?
No, he managed to completely avoid all of the corruption stories about Nancy Pelosi, about Hillary Clinton, about Bill Clinton, about Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi and the DNC.
And also Chuck Schumer and Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yep. Not a single word. I wonder why he's completely avoiding that in that clip. Didn't say anything about it whatsoever. It's almost as if you can see his corporate taskmasters handing him a big wad of cash.
And you can feel the fear. And, you know, last week, Tim Canova was telling us that the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz gave him the first from computer to human transmitted virus. But I bet you won't hear about that from Chris Hayes. And he used to be a fucking labor reporter.
Total labor reporter. Not so much anymore. Now he's just it's more like Chris Shill Hayes.
I like that, Chris Shill Hayes. I like that a lot.
Chris Hayschel.
Chris Hayschel. Giving a facial for the corporations because he's a fucking sellout. Speaking of fucking sellouts, there's another a coward on YouTube. He does a mini MSNBC show, and he wants Chris Hayes' job, but he stammers too much. And he's one of these guys that's always going on that, oh, no, we need to stop Trump because of the Supreme Court. Guess what? You voted for Hillary, and you still got Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme fucking Court. How do you feel like a chump now? But let's play this clip because he's going to go into Ohio and everything else. Not a word when the DNC was stealing it from Bernie, but he's going to talk now. And we're going to talk about it. And maybe he's not a fucking sellout anymore.
The central question in this case was whether the National Voter Registration Act prevented this type of notify, wait, and purge process.
Pause it. I'm a fucking sellout. I'm a fucking sellout. Okay, keep playing it.
According to the NVRA, registrants who have not responded to a notice and who have not voted in two consecutive general elections for federal office shall be removed from the official list of eligible voters, except that no registrant may be removed solely by reason of a failure to vote. Okay? Now, Alito, when he wrote the opinion deciding this case, says that Ohio does not rely solely on a failure to vote to remove them from the rolls. Breyer, on the other hand, in writing the dissent,
so what he
points out that in fact the process does not start, or I should say this process starts because of a failure to vote.
You know, Donnie, he talks so slowly, you can't follow anything he's saying.
Right, exactly.
And it's because he's covering up for the fact that he doesn't even talk about the DNC in this.
Yeah, well,
and
exactly.
And even people who voted for Hillary Clinton, in no way did it help with the voter disenfranchisement that's happening in Ohio. He is spending his time on this and doesn't say a single word about Seth Rich, which is still a question.
There's a lot of questions, and I guess my question for you, AA, as a content curator and an investigative journalist and someone who's blown the lid on all the corruption, is do you think that he's doing that on purpose?
I'm also a dental hygienist.
Do you think he's doing that on purpose, or is he just so fearful that the fucking oxygen isn't circulating to his brain? Because guess fucking what? Brett Kavanaugh would be on the Supreme Court even if Hillary Clinton was elected to fucking presidency. Merrick Garland said that he wanted to strip birthright citizenship. I saw it some fucking where. Don't ask me for a citation. I'm a fucking jerk-off comedian. But that's the fucking point. And the same thing would have happened anyways. And Bernie Sanders, we're going to get to him in a second. He won't even come on this fucking show.
Yes.
So am I crazy?
No.
Let's go take a call. You're calling from a 757 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from? Welcome. You're in the no fucking sellout zone. Seven five seven, are you there? Todd Snowflakes, hi. Let's try another call. You're calling from an 847 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Osh from Chicago.
Osh from Chicago. Gotta be quick.
Hi, I just want to say that I love the investigative journalism you're doing. I think it's super spot on. And that Bernie Sanders is a fucking corporate sellout. Also, have you heard that Michael Brooks? I mean, what a sellout. I mean, he's talking about, like, you know, the Lavanjato thing. I want to get a t-shirt with Lavanjato.
So like Todd Snowflake's been asking for a Lavanjato t-shirt because, well, Todd, why do you want a t-shirt for what happened in Brazil when they put all the fucking, the corporatists, like Lula, they put him in jail because they fucking investigate people there.
I think clearly
you know. It's great.
I'm going to go to Todd Snowflake on that. Thanks for the call. Todd, why do you want a Lavanjato t-shirt?
Same reason I believe this.
So I say vote third party, no matter what, no matter where you are. I don't care if you're in a swing state.
I don't know who the fuck that is, but I agree.
Or a fascist government.
Because what they did was they showed, and now everybody's saying, oh, Bolsonaro, he's saying that I'm going to kill all the gay people. As if there wasn't fucking homophobia in Brazil when Lula was president. Fuck off.
Donnie, I did a video commenting on the Righteous Opinions video that he did about the humanitarianism's video that was a critique of the culture counter contra spin video that was done in reaction to the fascist Ferger video and the video that was basically a total takedown of the entitlement enlightenment video that Kevin did. And I agreed with what you said.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot of people were glad you did that video because there was a lot of propaganda going around the internet because people say they're doing independent news, but really what they're doing is repeating DNC talking points, and the DNC is corrupt. So, and a lot of what you're going to hear now about is Kamala Harris because they want to put a pretty face back on corruption. They want soul cycle corruption, not ugly fat corruption. So they like Kamala Harris, even though she's a corporatist. And Kamala Harris came out and she supported Bernie Sanders. She's saying that she supports health care for all, which I don't even know if Bernie even supports it anymore because he's still in the Democratic caucus. But here she is, and she's going to say that she supports Bernie Sanders' plan. And I want to know if everybody in the studio and AA recognizes anything about how Kamala Harris announces her fucking support.
Kamala Harris of California.
Thank you. Thank you, Bernie. Well, I'm honored to stand with my colleagues and be in a room full of leaders. And this is a moment in time that I think we know is a very significant moment in time for our country, where we, all of us, are standing up and saying, let's just do what's right. You've heard so many folks talk about it because we know it. Listen, no baby is born in America, born as a Democrat or a Republican. This should not be thought of as a partisan issue. It's not even a bipartisan issue. This is a nonpartisan issue. Cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure affects folks around our country, regardless of whether they're in a red state or a blue state, regardless of their income, regardless of their status. And we should not differentiate in the way that we do public health policy. We should understand everyone, all, should receive the health care they need, regardless of where they live, their income, or their zip code. And that's what this bill is about, and I am proud to co-sponsor it. It is about saying that this is about a right, not about a privilege for a few. And let's be clear, it is not only about what is the right thing to do morally and ethically.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean? It's not the right thing to do morally or ethically? Did you hear that, AA?
I did. You know, I did a video that was a response to the Temporal Talkers video that Resistance Radio had critiqued, which was a response to the loophole liberal Ken over there. And then, of course, Jason at the Horseshoe Hero had written a video, done a video that was actually semi-animated. And my response was, can we play the video again? The one by Harris?
Well, I think your response was that Kamala Harris, did you see how bored she looked? Like, she didn't even want to be there. Maybe if it was a press conference for bombing Russia, she would be excited.
She seemed to be, like, completely uninterested. Could you see her body language? One of the things that I said on the video that I was a response to the egoless egalitarian was her body language totally...
Do you guys think she might be ill?
Well, that was the question, because the mopey progressive had said that she's a dead ringer for having MS, and I thought she does look kind of strange the way she's, if you see the way she's sort of holding herself there, like she's trying to say, like, I do Pilates, but really my whole central nervous system's breaking down. You can't really tell what's happening.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if that Hot Topic adult slut from the Majority Report were here, she might say that this is a sign the left is making some progress. Maybe we can use Medicare for All as the tip of the spear to get us closer to socialism, but that's just something
that's bullshit.
Would say.
Fuck off. Fuck off with that. And you know, these are the same people who will tell me and AA to not retweet Mike Cernovich to end fucking war.
We are close to ending war because Cernovich has helped us. He's got a lot of actually great ideas, particularly about funnel sales.
Exactly. And then people said, oh, maybe, I don't know, do I agree with his promoting, I guess there was some type of pill that you give to gorillas at the zoo, and he was saying you give it
that
to girls. And I was saying, I don't agree with that. But the next one that said that Assad is a hero of Syria, I do fucking agree with. So we can't work across lines? Fuck off.
I think that FDR and Lenin teamed up.
Yeah! Exactly. You're the historian. I'm just a jack-off comedian. I didn't know that. That's a bit. Todd, did you know that Lenin and FDR teamed up? I'd like to get a Lenin and FDR t-shirt. It's unbelievable. It's fucking amazing.
I don't know. FDR was a bit of a sellout, man.
Yeah. FDR. Yeah. Well, we had another, speaking of sellouts. Now, I've said, we supported Bernie Sanders, and we said, I mean, AA, you and me and other people, we were blowing the fog alarm. We were saying the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Tom Perez and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow and Chris Matthews and Chris Hayes again. They were all, and Joe Biden and Tim Kaine, that they were going to steal the election from Bernie Sanders and then declare a war with Iran and Russia simultaneously. And then get Merrick Garland on the fucking Supreme Court, who doesn't support Roe v. Wade, which you reported too. And we reported all of that. But Bernie Sanders, he said nothing. And I'm starting to get scared that maybe they have something on him.
Well, Bernie Sanders has never been on my show.
Ah. He hasn't been on mine either, but I will show you. Look, check out this clip of him.
No, I've tweeted at him. It has never come on.
Sounds like a smoking fucking gun to me.
Well, let's look at this. This is Bernie Sanders, who won't respond to AA's tweets, or the multi progressives.
I was on his side. Now I don't like him.
Or how they will be, or if.
You know, Anderson, there's almost nothing that one can say. The idea of tearing little children from the arms of their parents, putting them into detention cages, and then making a big deal about an executive order which may do absolutely nothing for these 2,300 children is literally beyond belief. Trump once again has lied. He told the American people that this was a policy created by Congress, could only be addressed by Congress. He was lying. Of course, it was a crisis that he created and attempted to address today, but he didn't go anywhere near far enough. So where we are right now is close to 2,400 kids are still separated from their parents. There is no understanding, as your reporters have indicated, when these children will be reunited.
He'll go on CNN and whitewash Barack Obama's record, but he won't respond to your fucking tweet.
Yeah, that you hear what he says there, and then you think he won't come on my show.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. And if you think about it, you and I were doing the math earlier. Hillary Clinton didn't go on my show or your show. That's 0-2, and she lost.
Lost.
Do the fucking math.
Do the math.
Well, if
you hear him talk about those things, and then you realize he hasn't been on either one of our shows, and it's just, why should he get support?
If he doesn't like ICE so much, what does he want, the Clinton Global Initiative to do border security?
Well, I mean, that's the other question, is that we don't like ICE, and we need to, you know, to end war. But I think Hillary Clinton might have even been worse if they unleashed, could you imagine, you know, Global Initiative security forces? They would probably be killing multiple people at maybe at the Canadian border, too.
There's a lot of international viewers who watch my show.
There's a lot of people. Let's go back to the phones. You're calling from a 978 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from? You're at the no fucking sellout zone.
Hey, I'm calling from Baghdad, Iraq. My name is Sammy.
Sammy, this is a very interesting time for you to call.
Yes, and I'm not prepared for this. I didn't know it was going to be like this, but guess I'm calling to talk about Jimmy Dore, I swear.
Who?
Who's that?
Some brilliant guy, a leftist.
Is he fucking sellout?
There's other YouTube channel that I used to watch around the election called The Majority Report. They are the real sellouts.
Well, they're mini MSNBC, and what happens is that Sam Cedar and Michael Brooks and Matt Lack and Jamie Peck and Brendan Finn, what they like to do is smear progressives.
Cedar.
No, because they kept on telling us to vote for the lesser evil, and that's it's a stupid idea because
look
the lesser evil
now.
Is still evil.
Right, and they're still evil. And by the way, guess what? They did that. They said, oh, vote for the Supreme Court. Donald Trump's president. How does it feel to be a fucking chump?
And here's the thing. They said vote for Hillary, but they neglected the fact that Trump would destroy the Republican Party. And that's what we want as the final, you know, as the whatever we want to get from this. But
exactly.
Seriously speaking, so, yeah. And it's happening. It's happening. See, like we have a week from, a week until the election, and it's happening.
Well, you know, what it reminds me of.
Vote for the Greens.
What it reminds me of is if you can vote without fear, but because there's this race, there's a guy named Steve King in Iowa, And we don't like Steve King. Yeah. He's not, I mean, actually, AA, I know, has done several podcasts with him and asked for his autograph.
He's come on my show.
Yeah. So maybe we don't all see eye to eye on everything. But Steve King, you know, he says some pretty bad stuff about immigrants and whatnot. And so there's a Democrat running against him. And I have not heard that Democrat say that Hillary Clinton should be tried in The Hague. So I've said, I'm not going to support her because, to me, I'm not going to support the candidate because they want me to vote against white nationalism, but I want to vote for something.
Yeah, but that's also, people are voting out of fear of white supremacy or of some type of fascism, and you can't vote out of fear.
Can't vote out of fear.
The Green candidate. Write in a Green candidate because... Don't be afraid.
In Baghdad, I know the scary AA is talking. I'm sorry to interrupt. But in Baghdad, you know what's the most popular thing nowadays in the hipster cafes? They're talking about the Green New Deal. And it's the number one trending subject in Baghdad. And you guys in the U.S., you still need to catch up.
Well, would you I have a question for you. If you were voting in Iowa, would you want Steve King or a fucking corporate sellout Democrat or Jill Stein?
Jill Stein all the way.
Exactly.
I have a question. If you could go back in time, Nader 2000, right?
Definitely. What are we talking about?
I was actually hearing that there's Nader 2000 stickers all over Baghdad. And because what people had wanted was they wanted an invasion of Iraq, and then they could have sectarian warfare to really put an ugly face on the system there, and then there would be a fucking revolution. We could bring the Green Party to Iraq that way.
You can. But seriously, the other day, I know you had an interview with Chris Hedges, and I couldn't help but to notice how happy you were when you were reading quotes from his book. The look on your face was precious. Please go back and check the clip.
Well, Chris Hedges, you know, he had this clip where he said Fred Hampton said, I want to work with the neo-Nazi party so that we could build infrastructure projects in the South, and that's why the FBI killed him. And so Chris Hedges was reading that for us.
Being an Arab, I cannot wait to work with the far right who consider me a subhuman or an animal or...
And there's plenty of things that we don't agree on. I don't think you're a subhuman. I don't know what AA thinks, but there's all sorts of opinions. But the point is we could come together to end fucking war.
Exactly. I don't care if they look at me as a subhuman or an animal. If the point is to end wars, let's do it.
But what about the Supreme Court?
Right? Right. Don't vote out of fear for being subhuman.
In a sense, that's like the ultimate racism, is the idea of I'm going to vote because I'm so afraid of having my voting rights and health care stripped away and being killed by security forces. So I'm so afraid I'm not a full human. That's how Hillary Clinton was the real white supremacist.
The problem the caller has is that he thinks there is a chance that somehow he'll be invaded, and that could happen, or maybe Pluto would crash into Saturn, and then we all burn in the sun. That could also happen.
By the way, guys, speaking of invasion, I went back to see this. I'm visiting my family for a week, but a lot of my friends in the neighborhood are not there. So when I asked, it turned out that they're in the caravan. So this is something to because they're like the Middle Eastern and everything, and they're in the caravan.
So I've been hearing a lot of things about this caravan, and I remember when fucking John Edwards in 2007, and he was supposed to be this great progressive, but he also said that we should have a border on Mexico. So fucking tell me about fear mongering about the caravan when John fucking Edwards said that,
right? Kristen,
oh, no, they're all sellouts. Please don't get me wrong. I'm just,
Kristen Gillibrand, 12 years ago, did not support the idea of driver's licenses for immigrants, I think.
Oh, but AA, what about the Supreme Court? What about the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I'm really afraid, but it turns out we got Gorsuch and Kavanaugh anyway.
Hey, Clinton voters, how does it feel to vote out of fucking fear and lose anyways. You feel like a fucking chump. Thank you for the call.
That's a rhetorical question because none of us are fucking sellouts.
Yeah, exactly, because we're not fucking sellouts. So you know how we've been saying for a long time that that this whole Russia story, it's a hoax, and Noam Chomsky said it was designed by Putin. That Putin's actually the good guy in all of this, but it was designed actually by Exxon.
Assad's better.
Assad's a hero.
And, it's weird that he did not get Time Man of the Year.
Well, I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know about the mainstream media. And what happened was that Noam Chomsky had said, and Todd sometimes tells me that Noam Chomsky didn't actually say this, but at any rate, Noam Chomsky said that what happened was that Exxon and the Clintons, they want war with Russia. So what they did was they actually planned this out so that even if Hillary lost the race, they would have this lie about Russia collusion, and it's a lie. And now Robert Mueller, who Barack Obama wants to be the Democratic nominee in 2020, it looks like, oh, what a surprise. Maybe he's a bad guy. Maybe there's a whole story of sexual assault and abuse by St. Robert Mueller, who, you know, Rachel Maddow compares to Mahatma Gandhi when she isn't calling for bombing Moscow. And so I don't. Have you heard anything about this, AA? Apparently, this is huge news. AA, are you there? Are you having another episode? So, anyways, but Todd's actually flagging me here. What is this, Todd? That this might not be actually true, apparently, about Robert Mueller.
Oh yeah, no, Robert Mueller is total hoax. And
but you're saying that maybe these allegations that apparently they're not true.
On Twitter, they seem to be walking it back a bit. But who knows at this case then? I mean, I never really trusted Mueller to begin with.
Well, that's the thing.
I didn't trust him before this or after it.
So. I don't trust Robert Mueller. And I have to ask myself, who would want to make up a story about Robert Mueller, especially when the Clintons and MSNBC love him more than anyone? I don't know. It's very red flag.
That would be their motivation. They have no motivation to in any way take Robert Mueller out.
Right, because
I'm suspect of that.
Yeah,
this is red flaggy all over the place.
Right. And we play that clip. I don't know where it comes from, but exactly, because the pieces don't fit. And that's why exactly bug your eyes out like that, AA. Exactly.
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a bad connection on the feed. So we're going to take another call. You're calling from a 786 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hi. My name is AJ. I'm 786 caller. This is the area code for Miami. I'm calling from Miami, Florida.
Oh, Gillum is a sellout.
Yeah, Andrew Gillum is a fucking sellout. Did you see that picture he took with Cory Booker? That was disgusting.
He'll take a picture with anybody. I would not vote for him.
Yeah, because the thing is at first they're like, oh, well, he's just taking a selfie with another prominent African-American politician. But then the next thing you know, it's okay that the pharmaceutical companies want us to go to fucking war with Syria because we should be scared of the Supreme Court. Fuck off.
DeSantis has never taken a picture with Cory Booker.
That's the one thing I will say about DeSantis. So we don't support DeSantis, but you're saying, in other words, AA, he's never taken a picture of Cory Booker, who's a fucking sellout.
At least there's that. There's no difference except for they vote their.
They vote out of fear.
No.
Caller, AJ, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just calling in just to hear what your opinion is on the WWF releasing how 60% of the animals in the world have been eliminated since 1970.
And that's because of Barack Obama. because what we had said for a long time was that Barack Obama came into office saying that he was going to save the animals. Meanwhile, he actually killed I think it was a Penny Pritzker. She had a plan to kill the animals with her hotel chain. And then the Clinton Global Initiative got a kickback that funneled through the Pritzker family, but we're supposed to just vote Republican because of the Supreme Court.
So
where do you think all those healthy lunches came from, huh?
Exactly.
So Gillum and DeSantis were both on the stage in front of podiums during the debate, and there was no Green candidate there, and so they're the same.
Exactly, and I've said this many times before, that the two that are
What's
that are
the
standing,
difference? They're both on the debate.
They're both literally on the podium together, and the Green Party.
Did you notice the things they stand in front of looked almost identical because they're identical?
Well, wow, that's a good point.
I did a video about woke white guys video where he commented on the United Front Freaks video that was a response to the altruistic automation video.
No, I saw that video, and I think that was really important because you were clearing up a lot of propaganda that said that they would do something about climate change, even though the Clinton Global Initiative was actually the leading cause of climate change from 2000 to 2016.
My biggest complaint with Axis, Praxis, and Taxes is their constant railing on the horseshoe hero, and I did a response to the loophole liberals' defense of the horseshoe hero's reply to Resistance Radio's attack on Axis, Praxis, and Taxes, which was attacking the altruistic automation video. That, and I just think we've got to end this infighting.
Exactly. We got to end the infighting so we can end war. And you were saying this on Mein Green Fuhrer's Patreon bonus content. And even though we don't agree with anything, but everything that Mein Green Fuhrer says, but we agree that he's green and we like to be green, but they smeared you for that because they didn't agree with the idea that apparently, which I don't agree with, but other people said that he said that in order to save the animals, we need to kill all of the Jews and wipe them out across the planet. You went on his show not to agree with that, but you still got smeared for it anyways by the same people who want war.
Totally smeared because I'm against war.
Exactly. You're calling from a 478 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hi, hello. This is Sam Cedar, host of the Majority Report with Sam Cedar, calling you from Brooklyn, New York.
So now we're confronted by the main force of being a fucking sellout on YouTube.
No, excuse me, sir. I'm actually here to deliver an extended diatribe on how people who don't vote for Democrats are morons, including you, sir. Do you realize that there are serious differences between the Democratic and Republican parties, that Republicans are much more likely to vote to take away the crown jewel of our social safety net known as Social Security, sir? Don't you care about that? Aren't you ever going to have to retire and stop doing these silly shows, sir?
I can't actually hear you, and I'm having a major things are too fucking busy. I can't debate you. Goodbye. But don't fucking smear me. You're calling from a 201 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Dingo. I'm calling from Wisconsin. And, you know, my district, Trump won by exactly one vote. And my friends keep telling me that my vote for the Green Party was really just a ruse because I thought that Hillary Clinton would win and I just wanted to be a contrarian after the election, and that's not why. It's because my vote is very special to me. I'm not going to give it to just anyone. And Joe Stein's message came inside of me, and I felt like opening myself up to her.
So in other words, you were saying that you actually wanted to vote for what you believed in and not out of fucking fear.
And definitely not because I wanted to be a contrarian. I definitely didn't think that Hillary was going to win.
This is a beautiful call. Thank you so much for sharing.
And I want them to stop saying that, okay? Just tell them to stop saying that, all right?
Well, I can't control them because these are the same people that want war with fucking Russia and told you to vote because of the Supreme Court. So they're going to keep vote shaming you. And now Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to say the same thing.
I mean, I just couldn't vote for a mass murderer. And at least Trump isn't a corporatist, right?
Well, right, because Trump's kind of shaking things up in a certain way.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I really needed that.
The doomsday clock is at its closest it's ever been to doomsday. So voting for Hillary Clinton didn't help that, did it?
Yeah, exactly, because that was another thing they said, that Judd Trump talks about how he wants to use nuclear weapons, which we don't agree with, but then they wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton, who is a fucking war criminal.
It's 2 minutes before midnight on doomsday, but if we had voted for Hillary Clinton, it would be 2 minutes past.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because we knew that she had actually wanted to go to war with Russia over Syria. We got to wrap
Russia
up in a minute.
Russia and Syria and Iran.
Russia, Syria, and Iran. Mexico. Hold on just 1 second. I'm actually seeing a final call that we have to get to. You're calling from a 509 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Good afternoon, guys. This is John from San Antonio.
John from San Antonio. It's great to hear your voice. You're the final call of the day. What do you have to say? What's on your mind?
Tallahassee mayor and Florida gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum has recently moved up to number 12 on my list of top 40 hypocritical gubernatorial candidates after he was photographed with Cory Booker. Cory Booker, we know, is friends with fucking Jared Kushner and Wall Street banks. So that's what's going on with my list there. As you know, our only hope for real revolution is if we subvert the Democrats in the midterms, bringing into power more right-wing fascists, which will finally wake people up for the revolution. At the top of my list of candidates who are most vulnerable to subversion, I've got Randy Brice in Wisconsin. He's a fake progressive, which we know, because he's running as a Democrat, who are all fake progressives. I think we know that. We know the Democrats bombed Yemen way before Trump. And so I'm just not seeing enough people talking about Randy Brice's DUI. I saw a poll recently that only 15% of voters in his district have even heard of his DUI. I'd like to get that number down to about 5% if we can.
John, I've been talking about the DUI every fucking week. I talk about it every week, John. If the people don't respond to the DUI, they're not going to respond to the DUI. It's
a little cynical, but ultimately our goal here is revolution. And so we got to take out Randy Brice no matter how we can, because there's nothing more dangerous than a fake progressive in Congress. And just real quick, I'd like to finish off with a list of my top 40 Green Party candidates right now running in midterms, and you might not have heard of any of these people, and none of them have a chance of winning at all in any way, but this is the only way we can send a message to the Democrats. So there's Jimmy Cooper, Austin Bashor, Kevin Alumba, Bryce Miller, John Vigil, Christopher Allen, Guy Mignon, Brianna Johnston, Robert Corrier, David Justice Arnold. And I guess I'd like to get your thoughts real quick on David Justice Arnold and what you think chances are. Do you think he's going to break that 2% threshold that we're always looking for?
I'm hearing there's a lot of momentum in his district, and between the susceptibility to baseless conspiracy theories and general depression, voter apathy, and complete lack of civic engagement, plus also just good old-fashioned name misidentification, I'm hearing people say that he might actually get up to 2.5.
Yeah, that's pretty much what my polling's been saying, too. If you look at the numbers, I think there's a real chance he scratches that 2.5%. Which puts us on a real good trajectory for 2020. Jill Stein, it looks like she's gearing up to run.
I hope so.
And we'll be right there to support her. Thanks for all you guys do.
Okay. Thank you, John. John, never a fucking sellout. Never a single fucking sellout in the entire show. thanks again for raging against the corporate machine with us in the no fucking sellout zone. AA Seaman, what are all the places that people can find you and your work?
Basically here.
Well, there you have it. That's great. Subscribe to all of our Patreons. You can give us PayPal donations. You can buy shirts, mugs, and computer repairs. And we also have a bunch of live shows. And we're going to, of course, continue to expose Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Thank you to Todd Snowflake, the Moby Progressive. And we will be back next week.
Do not freak out.
Fade, fade. I know somehow.